are Locked On Giants, your daily New York Giants podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, New York Giant fans, and welcome to another edition of Locked On Giants, part of the Locked On Podcast family, your team every day. You're with Patricia Traina. I'm your host, and joining me is special guest Chris Biziano of the Giant Insider. He has been kind enough to join me on the podcast going back to last week, in which we have been breaking down the different positions on the Giants. And last week we did offense. This week we are doing defense. So we're in our second day now of breaking down the defense. And today, Chris, we are going to look at the edge rushers.
All right, Patty, how you doing? Okay.
I'm doing great, my friend. Always.
So, Chris, let's get to it.
Yeah. So, Chris, let's jump right into it. And, you know, we're breaking down edge rushers. For those who don't know, we're doing edge rushers separately from defensive line, which we did yesterday, and linebackers, because, you know, the edge rushers, it's kind of evolved into its own type of position, I think, you know, unofficially. It's not, you know, it's still considered either an outside linebacker or defensive end, but, you know, it takes a special kind, if you will, to play that position. And the Giants this year, they had, I don't know if we would consider Kareem Martin one, but they had three guys. They had Olivier Vernon, who of course was supposed to be the primary guy. They brought in Connor Barwin, and they had rookie Lorenzo Carter, one of their third round draft picks. And Chris, I think we've got to start with Olivier Vernon and the year he had. Now, again, unfortunately, he got hurt. You know, high ankle sprain. I believe it was the same ankle that he injured last year, but when he got back, I mean, this is interesting. If you put any stock in Pro Football Focus, they actually had Olivier Vernon rated as the highest ranked Giant defender. Yeah. What did you 14, see? From, what did
14th
you
see overall?
Him?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, Patty. What did I see from him? Yeah. Listen. His production doesn't match a contract. All right, I'm not going to go there. Okay, but it's not fair to Olivier to say he had no production. And you look at his stats, Pat, okay, and you see, like, you know, 655 snaps on the D-line, 13 hits, 25 hurries, 8 sacks, 7 sacks, whatever. They had 8, but I had 7. But anyway, that's not bad production considering, Pat, he missed 5 games. He played 11 games. I would say probably about 6 of them he was actually healthy, Pat, that the ankle felt, you know, high ankle sprain kind of went away on him and all that. So, listen, is it $19 million cap hit for 2019 production? No. Is it zero production? No. I know Giant fans are down on him, but he's still a pretty productive guy. He was ranked 14th overall, Pat, by Pro Football Focus. Those numbers aren't bad, but I just said, I just don't know if he's going to be back at that cap number. But, Pat, he's the most productive edge guy they have on the team. It's tough to replace a guy like this. It is not saying that he's long-tailed, folks. Don't get me wrong. I'm just saying that he is somewhat productive when he's healthy, Pat.
When he is healthy. But, you know, here's an area, Chris, that I felt slipped on Olivier Vernon since he's been with the Giants. And, again, part of it is due to the injury. I'm not going to, you know, pretend that that doesn't exist or factor into the equation. But where Olivier Vernon, to me, has dropped off a little bit is his play against the run.
Yeah,
okay,
good
if
point.
You go, again, now, if you look at Pro Football Focus's grades, which, you know, mm-hmm. I'm still not sure how they calculate that, and mm-hmm. I know it's not a definitive way to measure a guy. His grade finished 71.2 mm-hmm. against the run, just barely topping last year's 69.5. But if you want to look at hardcore stats here, Vernon tied last year's total of 22 run stops. Okay,
right.
So and in 2016, when he was able to play a full season, he had 40. So mm-hmm. how many times did we watch Vernon come crashing down on that edge and then get caught up in the wash and not get off his block, and then all of a sudden now his edge is exposed?
Yeah, too many times. No question about it. I thought he was an excellent run stopper in previous years. I thought he was all right this year. You make a great point. Because a lot of people, you know, over the last few years on the Giants and when he was with the Dolphins, a lot of people talk about, you know, him getting to the quarterback pressures and this and that. But a lot of people overlooked how well he played the run. You know, I did see a drop in that this year. And definitely as far as collapsing too much on zone reads, yeah, I saw that a lot. Not his best year against the run, Pat. Now, there's a lot of that because he can't explode off that ankle and all that, possibly, but could have been better. Pat, it's going to be anybody's guess whether or not he comes back, but guess what? Well, I guess we'll find that out in the next few months from Gettleman.
Yeah, you know, we talk about the contract, and you know, to be clear, Chris, I would not object if he is brought back. But, you know, if you're going to pay a guy the same kind of, you know, in the neighborhood of a Von Miller or a Khalil Mack, you better get that type of production. And again, I don't blame Vernon for the injuries because obviously nobody goes out there and says, oh, I want to get injured and collect the paycheck. That's not who Olivier Vernon is. I think you and I both know that.
No, he's not.
But with that said, if you're going to carry a big contract number, it's got to match your production. And injuries notwithstanding, you know, like I said, the problem with the run and how that has slipped off, it just, to me, it doesn't make sense to bring him back at that cap number. Now, will they redo that cap number? There's certainly a possibility. Mm-hmm. Will they move on from Olivier Vernon? Because this year's draft class is so rich in defensive line edge rushers.
Yeah.
That's what I think is going to ultimately end up happening. And Chris, let me ask you this. Did you think Vernon was really a good fit for what the Giants tried to do this year?
No, and I thought he would be, Pat. I thought this defense, especially when you looked at him in training camp, you said, oh, this guy's going to really excel in the system. But how many times you see his hand down in the dirt, right? He had a three-point stance. Saw it a lot, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I thought he was going to be standing most of the time on the outside. I mean, he did have 600, a lot of snaps, and you know, on the D-line. I mean, I was a little surprised by the way they used him, a little bit. But, Pat, going back to the contract and Olivier Vernon's play, I understand his production doesn't meet the contract. But, Pat, I have to ask you this. Who gave him that ridiculous contract? Pat, that was a Von Miller-type number contract. He was never a Von Miller, Pat. You know, I understand everybody gets overpaid in free agency, Pat. I understand that. We saw it this year with Nate Solder. It happens. That's part of free agency. But Reese gave him that ridiculous contract, and he's not going to say no to it. So I understand both points of view. All I'm saying is that the contract he got is Von Miller-esque. He's not a Von Miller-type player. He's a solid player, Pat. He's a nice edge guy. He's going to get you 8 to 10, 6 to 9 sacks, you know, that whole deal. He had 1 year, he had 11 sacks. That was it. I think it was 11 a number.
Yes.
So you're not going to – Pat, what I'm saying is that you're not going to get the production from Olivier Vernon to match that contract. It's not going to happen. He's not that type of talent.
No.
Pat, I understand fully that I could definitely see them moving on because it's deep in – you know, this draft is deep in defensive line. And he could just replace him with a guy with a rookie contract. I could definitely see that happening, Pat.
And then here's the other thing, Chris. And I've made this point numerous times. When he was in Miami and he had that good, you know, double-digit sack year, he had a pretty good guy playing opposite of him, Cameron Wake. Now, if you go back to his time with the Giants here, you know, Olivier Vernon, you know, he did pretty well when he had JPP opposite of him. But remember when JPP lost like I think it was the last four games of that 2016 season.
Right.
And if I'm not mistaken, Vernon's numbers dropped, you know, and then you go to this year, you know, 2017, you know, Vernon was out, JPP was there. You go to 2018, now he doesn't have JPP on that other side. So now other teams can hone in on him. And, you know, we've made this point numerous times. Vernon's not your typical size for a defensive end. He's 6'2", 262. That's technically considered small for a defensive end. All right, so the move to outside, you know, linebacker kind of made sense, you know, especially because he had that quick burst. But, you know, you mentioned the use of him, and I've got the stats up here, his snap breakdown per Pro Football Focus. He played, let me see, 655 snaps on the D-line.
Exactly.
Most of those, 407 at the right end. Okay, right outside end, excuse me, and only 152 of those as the right outside linebacker. So, yeah, they were lining him up a lot with his hand in the ground, and you know, sometimes we saw him in some 4-3 looks, sometimes in some 3-4,
right.
sometimes in some exotic looks. And I'm just not sure if there was a rhyme or reason. I'm sure Betcher had a reason for what he was doing, but it just seemed like what we saw in the summer didn't kind of sync up with what we saw in games.
Yeah, I mean, what were we led to believe in the summer is that he was going to be a stand-up outside backer, right? Mm-hmm. And meanwhile, like you just broke it down, I have it in front of me too, the stats. You know, his hand. I mean, listen, Betcher's a 3-4 guy, but folks, this isn't Belichick's 3-4. I mean, how many times have you seen him line up four guys on a defensive line? All right, it's not the prototypical 3-4 defense. I mean, but I thought Vernon was going to duel. I even expected him covering guys, Pat, out of the 3-4, right? Stand up outside backer. That didn't really happen. I mean, probably thank God it didn't happen, but he was used totally different than what we were led to believe, Pat.
Yeah.
He basically had his hand in the dirt a lot. And like you said, when you have your hand in the dirt and you don't have another guy opposite of you that's getting, you know, that wants some attention and all, like a Cameron Wake like you had for years over there in Miami, it's tough. Pat, he's not a Khalil Mack type edge guy, okay? But he's a solid player, you know, and he was never really healthy here. I'm not defending him. I'm not on some Olivier Vernon cheerleading bandwagon. I'm just trying to say like it is. He was never healthy here, and he's not the type of player that has that matches that contract. I'm sorry, but he's a solid player, Pat.
Yeah, and he's the type of guy who, you know, look, if you look at 2007, 2011, when the Giants won the Super Bowl, they had three solid pass rushers, okay?
Yep.
Including
yep.
In 2007, they had a Hall of Famer in Michael Strahan.
Right.
So here's the dilemma if you're the Giants. You know you're keeping Lorenzo Carter, who we're going to talk about in the next segment. You know you're going to probably add another guy, you know, through the draft. Now, do you say, you know, if you're Dave Gettleman, do you say, okay, Olivier, I need you to take a pay cut? Or do you just say, you know what, you're just not a match for what we're doing moving forward. Thank you for your service.
Mm-hmm.
And send them going. Now he's only 28 years old. He's still technically in his prime. Okay, he still can be disruptive. But like I said, that drop-off against the run really bothered me a little bit with his performance this year. Do you just let a guy like that walk away, or do you maybe try and redo the number and trade him or, you know, maybe look to get something back for him?
You know what, Pat? If you're going to release him, which is a very good possibility, you better replace a guy that's going to get 8 sacks, 9 sacks.
Yep.
You know, listen, he had a little bit of a down year, you know, against the rush. No question about it, Pat, he did. But that doesn't mean he's not going to rebound in 2019 and go back to his solid run defending, you know? Uh-huh. So, you got a guy who gets the quarterback a little bit. You know, a lot of hurries there, Pat. I mean, you look at the hurries, 25 hurries. That's not a bad number, Pat, in basically 10 games, you know?
Yeah.
Because I know he played officially 11, but to me, he really played 6, Pat, because that's when I saw a healthy Vernon. But I understand he's out there. So if you're out there, then you got to produce. I understand all that. I get that. But so if you're going to release him, Pat, you better get a kid in here that's, you know, going to get to the quarterback, going to get some pressures, going to get some sacks, going to play the run pretty well. Listen, they might go to him to restructure his contract. I don't think Olivier will do that. I have to be honest with you. I don't think he would do that. So trade him. How are you going to trade him with that contract? Even if he restructures, I don't know if that's going to happen, Pat. So, you know, the possibility, the scenario of him getting released is definitely in play, you know, no question. But you better draft a kid, Pat, that's going to, you know, give you some numbers off that edge if you do that.
You say you don't think he'll restructure. I don't think he'll get another contract like what he got with the Giants.
Oh, no, no way.
You know,
no
so
way.
You never say never. He might just do that, you know? I mean,
Pat, you're 100% correct, Pat. You never could say never. I just don't think that he would do it. But, hey, I could be dead wrong, Pat. I that's just my opinion as far as the restructuring the contract.
Right. No, I hear you. Chris, let's take a quick break. When we come back, I want to talk about Barwin and I want to talk about Carter. I know you like Carter a lot. So, folks, stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back, Giant fans, to Locked On Giants. You're with Patricia Traina and special guest Chris Biziano of the Giant Insider. Does a really good job on their podcast and their paper. Do check them out. You can follow him and senior editor Jerry Foley on Twitter at Giant Insider. And we are breaking down the Giants' positions. We are currently doing edge rushers. And in segment one, we talked about Olivier Vernon. Chris, let's talk about Lorenzo Carter and Connor Barwin in this segment, because, and the reason why I mentioned the two together is because, you know, the Giants brought in Connor Barwin, and at the time everybody thought it was because of the injury to Vernon, which might very well have been, you know, a part of it. But the other thing that nobody's really talking about or giving Connor Barwin credit for is that he was brought in to really teach and mentor Lorenzo Carter. I mean, if you've spoken to Carter, I know I have, and how many times has Carter given Barwin credit for all the help he's given him?
Yeah, plenty of times. Yeah, listen, Barwin's been around the block, man. He's been through the wars in the NFL wars, I should say, and yeah, he's helped him a lot, no question about it. But as far as production wise, I mean, Connor Barwin has been an absolute zero for the Giants this year, zero.
Yeah, he has. And he's a guy who I know they signed to a 2-year contract. And I'm trying to remember what his savings is. I think it's, what, a couple million? A buck and a...
Yeah, he counts something like that. 1.2 towards next year's cap.
Yeah, I just don't think they bring him back next year. I think it's going to be, you know, of the edge rushers, Carter is a lock, obviously. He's a draft pick. He's under contract.
Excuse me, Patty, 365 if they cut him.
Oh, okay. So, yeah, that's a lot to bring back, especially if you're going to, you know, replace, you know, with a draft pick or two. So, but. Again, the key thing with Barwin, you know, and he was a good soldier. He did what he could, you know. The production wasn't there. I know at the end he kind of grumbled a little bit about his opportunities. But look, when you get opportunities and you don't cash in on them and make the most of them, what do you want a team to do?
What could he possibly do? He got his opportunities at the beginning of the year, Pat, and you might as well put shoulder pads on me. I could have got more hurries than him.
Yeah.
I mean, are you kidding me, Connor? I mean, I understand the grumbling at the end, but you had your shot. He was getting reps in the beginning of the year, Pat. He was getting snaps, he did nothing. I think he had, one sack this year, and that was a quarterback rolling out? Was that the Deshaun Watson?
So.
Yeah, I think it was the Deshaun Watson sack where he was, like, rolling out, and he lunged at him and happened to trip him up. I mean, he didn't produce, Pat.
Yeah.
So I understand the mannering Lorenzo Carter and all that. That's nice. Okay, but I don't see him being back next year. He produced nothing. He was brought in also, Pat, to give a little edge, you know, trying to get 4 or 5 sacks out of him, which I think the last 2 years he got 5 sacks each with the Eagles and the Rams, right? Mm-hmm. And he came over here this year, and I don't think he got 5 hurries, more or less, sacks. So – sorry, the production wasn't there. Time to move on from him. It's 365 dead money if you release him. If you keep him, it's 1.2 to the cap. I don't see it happening. Sorry.
Yeah, I'm looking at his stats right now on Pro Football Focus. He had 11 total pressures, which included the one sack that you mentioned, 7 hurries, 3 hits. And then you're looking at, you know, there were a lot of goose eggs in here. And, you know, he did play snaps. You know, in the beginning, he played, I think the first 5 games, which were the games that Vernon missed because of his ankle injury, he played like 30 plus snaps. All right? And then they started to tail off to 11, 10. I think Tampa Bay, against Chicago, he played 25, which is his highest total in the second half of the season. And like you said, he just, you know, 25 snaps, managed only 2 pressures, okay, in that game. No sacks, and then, you know, I'm looking at the tackling, and I see only 6 total tackles. That's not very good.
6 total tackles. Patty, you could put a helmet on and probably get more than that.
I don't know about that. My knees are both
shot. Patty, I don't have it in front of me. How many D-line snaps did Connor Baldwin have this year, since you have it in front of you?
Let me see. They have him down for 289 snaps. 113 against the run, 169 against the pass, and 7 in coverage.
Okay, so 289 D-line snaps, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he had 3 hits, 1 sack, and 11 pressures. Mm-hmm. So what are you doing out there? Hey, listen, Pat, I understand he's a veteran. He helped, you know, some kids out and all that. It's a production business. He didn't produce. That's why he lost his snaps, Connor. All right? I don't know what to tell you, but they should be moving on from him. I can't see him back.
Yeah, I don't think he's back either. I think they replace him with one of these young guys. And I could see them dipping into that group a couple of times. But before we get to that, Chris, let's talk about Lorenzo Carter. Because right. How many times did we sit in the press box and we were sitting there going, more Carter, please. More Carter, right. Please.
Right. And we did see some more Carter towards the end of the year. You know, I got him down here. You know, listen, he got a nice snap, 430 snaps on the line and all that. But look at his hurries, man. Look at the stats Lorenzo had for a kid, 430 line snaps. You know, he got 17 hurries, 8 hits, 4 sacks. Not bad, right, Pat?
No, not
and
bad
he's a
at
raw.
All.
The kids, listen, the kid was learning on the fly during the whole year, and he admitted that to me. I'm sure he admitted it to you that he's still grasping a lot of his defense, you know. And I thought that was a pretty nice production on special teams, too. The kid was a pretty good special teamer.
Yeah.
So a lot of upside with Lorenzo. I expect him obviously starting from day one next year, Pat. You look at those numbers. I like them, Pat. I like the numbers. His final numbers for the season, 17 hurries, like I just said. It's a nice little edge guy for next year. He's year two in the system. I expect a totally different – I expect a huge leap out of him, Pat, next year. Huge.
Yeah, the big thing with Lorenzo Carter is playing the run because, you know, right. We talk about this all the time. When kids come out of college, they're either good pass rushers or, you know, they excel against the run. Kerry Wynn was a good example of a guy who was very good against the run but needed to build himself into a pass rusher. Lorenzo Carter is kind of the opposite. A pass rushing prospect needs to get maybe a little bit more bulk to him. You know, he's 6'5", 250 pounds, probably needs to work on some upper body strength, which I'm sure he will, and just, you know, get a better feel for playing angles and just, you know, being patient and not over committing against the run, because there were times when he too, you know, would shoot inside and only to be fooled and leave his edge wide open.
Yeah, listen, he's a raw kid, Pat. He's a raw kid, very athletic kid. I like to see him bulk up a little bit, no doubt about it, but a huge upside, Pat. You know, he made some mistakes and he lost some snaps over Donnie Yet. There's no question about it. Betcher kind of hinted that, like, he's still learning the system. You know, when guys ask Betcher Donnie about maybe getting some more, you know, snaps out of Carter, you're going to see him more. And Betcher always kind of gave that answer. Well, he's really learning. We really like what he's doing. Read between the lines, he's, you know, he didn't grasp a lot of stuff. Okay. I don't expect that next year. I think he'll be fine.
No, and he did see his snaps increase towards the end of the year. He played against Dallas. He had a career-high 45 snaps. Otherwise, I think prior to that, 42 snaps was his career-high against Tampa Bay in Week 11. It went up and down a little bit. But look, the kid got better as the year went on. He was a work in progress, but he's got a lot of upside, and definitely agree with you that he is going to be part of the solution moving forward. You know, initially, I would have liked to have seen him paired up with Vernon as the two outside edge guys and then getting a third guy. As we discussed in the last segment, I don't know if that's going to happen because I don't know if they keep Vernon at his number.
Yeah, I'd like to see it happen too. But you know what? You might see a case of a rookie kid coming in here. And he's going to be the edge guy, you know, opposite of Lorenzo. You know, it's a very good, very distinct possibility. It might happen, you know. And Pat, did you say Carter had 45 snaps the last game against Dallas? So
yes.
That's a nice amount, Pat.
Yeah.
That's a nice amount. So Betcher, you saw the snap count increase as the season went along. You know, Betcher gaining a little more confidence in him, especially the last 3-4 games, whatever it was. You know, I find it stunning that he had 45 snaps and Connor Baldwin didn't. You know, oh my God. Well, I can't believe that. You know, I mean, Connor Baldwin was so productive out there. He's grumbling about it. You know, I mean, give me a break, Connor. You did nothing out there. Give me a break. Go back to Philadelphia. I'm sick of crying. Give me a break. I'm so glad he got the most snaps.
He's competitive. He wants to get out there. I can't fault him for that.
I don't fault for him at all, but it's a production business. You did nothing out there.
Absolutely. And here's what's interesting, Chris. You know, and actually, you know what? Let me hold this point to the next part because it does kind of fit in with the future. So let's take our final break here, and I'll come back and I'll make the point that I was about to make. So, folks, stay with us.
Hey, Giant fans. NFL playoffs are here, and it's time to get in on the action with MyBookie. Don't be the person with no rooting interest this year with Super Bowl 53 just around the corner. Make sure you're ready for the daily action by signing up at MyBookie today. They pay fast when you win, they're committed to excellent customer service, and they offer the craziest props. Remember, where you bet is just as important as who you're betting on. And if you want to make money during the postseason, you've got to go to MyBookie. Join now, and MyBookie will offer you a 50% deposit bonus when you use the promo code LOCKEDON in setting up your account. MyBookie, you play, you win, you get paid.
Welcome back to Locked On Giants. You're with Patricia Traina, and I'm joined by Chris Bizziano of the Giant Insider. And as I said, you can find his work at Giant Insider on Twitter. And you can find me on Twitter at Patricia_Traina. And for those of you who don't know, I write for Inside Football. I write for The Maven. I'm writing for sports. I write for SB Nation. So just follow my Twitter account if you want to see where I have various articles. I've been putting out some stuff cap-related, off-season plans, you know, you name it. I've been doing it. So, Chris, I started to make a point at the – and towards the end of that last segment. And here's what I see for the future moving forward. I mean, we can both agree that Lorenzo Carter is going to be in this mix. Now, if the Giants do, as you and I both anticipate will be the case, which is trim Olivier Vernon, mm-hmm. and they draft a young kid to go with Carter, I think they almost definitely have to get a veteran, because are you going to really put three young pass rushers or edge rushers there? Or are you going to want a veteran who maybe is, you know, a little bit more polished at doing both rushing the passer and playing the run? I think they're going to have to get a veteran.
Yeah, I expect to see somebody in here, definitely. Plus, it adds to the competition, you know. Yeah, I expect. Listen, he brought a veteran in with Connor Baum. It didn't really work out like I expressed. I expect to see another veteran type guy in here. Patty, I wish I had the free agency list. Who's, but you know, I'll find out in a few weeks who's there. But I totally expect him to bring somebody like that in, Gettleman. I'll be shocked if he does it, Pat.
Yeah, I would be surprised too, because we've talked about this before, you know, and I mentioned it earlier in the show. You've got to have at least three good pass rushers to keep, you know, rotating them in and out.
Yep. I mean, that's the goal, right? It doesn't always happen, but, you know, that's what every team's wish is, to have like three guys could get there, at least two guys, right, Pat?
Yeah.
This year we really had really nobody, right?
No,
I mean, Hill contributed a little bit. I understand Vernon did a little bit and all that. But we really didn't have a solid guy that you could say, okay, this guy's going to get the quarterback. We really didn't. So that's going to be a need that's going to be addressed by Gettleman. I don't think there's any question about it.
Yeah, I just pulled up the list of edge rushers, which you can find on Spot Rack, by the way.
Okay.
Some of the names that are on there. Now, I pulled up the UFAs, and obviously some of these names are going to be a factor here, you know, like the DeMarcus Lawrence, for example. I don't see that happening. I don't see Ezekiel Ansah being an option. I'm not sure Clay Matthews is going to be an option, but there's some other guys. Cameron Wake's going to hit free agency. Derek Morgan, KJ Wright, Thomas Davis of Carolina, that's a name. But I think Davis is retiring, so I'm not sure if he's going to be an option there. Brandon Graham of the Eagles,
mm-hmm.
Jadeveon Clowney, Dante Fowler, Alan Bailey, Terrell Suggs, Julius Peppers. You know, so you're probably going to get, if the Giants do this, Chris Long's another one, they're probably going to go with a guy who's, you know, in his 30s. Because like I said, you've got a young guy in Carter. You're going to have a young guy, you know, in the draft pick that supposedly they're going to take, or what we think they're going to take. You know, I just don't know that they're going to have, you know, make that third guy, you know, a rookie. I think somewhere in that batch, if they get rid of Vernon, they're going to need a veteran in that batch.
Yeah, obviously Clowney's the blue chipper there, and that's going to be a huge contract. So,
yeah.
And you got some other role guy. You know, Brandon Graham's a defensive end. He plays that wide nine. I don't know how he would fit into the system.
Yeah, he wouldn't be a fit.
Yeah, you know, you got to look at, you know, guys' production too. Like guys like Peppers on the tail end of the career. You know, who else is it? Thomas Davis? I'm sure is going to retire.
Davis, I think he's retiring. Yeah,
yeah, he's a linebacker.
Cameron Wake is 37 years old.
Yeah, I mean, Cameron Wake's up there now. He didn't have, you know, he had a pretty quiet year in Miami. So, listen, you can't get fooled into seeing a number of the name and say, oh, wow, Cameron Wake. You know, these guys are older now. You got to see what they did last year and all that. So, obviously, listen, is the one blue chip, and that's going to be Clowney, Pat.
And I don't know that Houston's going to let him out.
Yeah, and then, you know, DeMarcus Lawrence.
He's going to get a lot of money.
DeMarcus Lawrence is obviously the other one that's pretty, but I can't see Jerry Jones letting him walk either, you know?
Yeah. I mean, there are some you know.
There's some role guys you could fit under, you know, cap, make it work cap-wise, and maybe it could give you some production, you know?
Yeah, some guys like Paul Warrell.
I got
tongue-tied there. Dee Ford is another guy.
Dee Ford is a guy who had double digits.
Yeah, Dee Ford. Yeah, they're not going to be able to get him, because you got to remember they're not. I don't see them. If you're going to spend big bucks on a guy, I mean, you might as well just keep burning and hope that he plays healthy again. So, I think they're going to want to get somebody who's, you know, a little cheaper. Now I'm looking at Cardinal players. Benson Maiola is one guy.
Yeah, he's not a bad player.
Gerald Hodges, he's an outside linebacker.
He had a good year this year.
You wonder if maybe they dip into, you know.
See, there's a guy. Guys like that is who I could see Gettleman bringing in.
Yeah, you know, yeah, I agree.
Like Gerald Hodges had a good year for Arizona this year. Like I could see him, you know, Betcher knows him, you know. So those type of guys, Pat, creating competition, maybe getting you some sacks. I don't know what kind of locker room guys are, but they're good locker room guys, veterans. That's what I could see Gettleman bringing in. They just don't have the cap, Pat, to make a big, you know, swing and hit for home run for a guy like DeMarcus Lawrence or Clowney. You know, I just don't see them doing
that. Yeah, I don't either. They need – I mean, they've got to get Landon Collins re-signed. They're going to have to get a right tackle. I can't – unless, you know, they fall in love with Jonah Williams, I just don't see them, you know, going to the draft for the tackle. Yeah. You know, they need linebackers. They need help in a lot of spots, and they just can't go and swing for the fences and tie up big money in two or three guys, because that's going to cost them down the line. They're not going to be able to fill in some of these other holes that they have. And that's, you know, just a quick note, Chris, you know, speaking of that, I keep seeing people, you know, mentioning trading Odell Beckham Jr. And for the life of me, I don't understand why they say this, because you're looking, the Giants already have $9.2 million in dead money. If they trade Odell, that's another $16 million that gets added to that pile. That's over $25 million. Do you know how many players you could sign for $25 million? I mean, I just don't get the logic there, but I know that's off topic, but I had to throw that out there.
Yeah. I gotta be wrong. It's getting old, right? The Odell story, trading him, this and that. You know, Gettleman kind of made it known at the press, his last press, of saying we didn't sign him to trade him, you know. Yeah. So, like you said, it's a lot of dead cat money, man. You know, so, you know, owners don't want $25 to $27 million cat money, dead cat money, Pat. You know, no. You know, I don't see that happening.
And, you know, to the point about Vernon, you know, if they do cut him, yeah. I keep saying don't be surprised if they designate him as a post-June 1st move, because that will bump up the savings to 15.5. That'll cut down on the dead money this year. They will have some dead money next year. And, you know, but next year the cap's supposed to soar over $200 million. So it might be a little easier to swallow that. And then here's the other thing. You know, the Giants only – right now I think they have $27 million, and that's before any accounting is done. That's before they roll over, you know, any of the money that was left over from 2018, before they dole out who gets – incentive bonuses and who didn't reach incentives, and obviously before they do the cap hit. So I think making Vernon, if they are going to cut him, making him a post June 1st cap hit, that's a $15.5 million savings. Now you got enough to sign your draft class, and you should have more than enough money to get you through the rest of the year. You know, the drawback for those wondering is you can't use that money in the beginning of the year. So, in other words, if in February they cut a Vernon and they say, okay, you know what, he's a June 1st cap hit, that means that money will not be credited to their cap until after June 1st. That is the reason why we, you know, they are designated as June 1st right. cap hits. It's designed to lower the hit on the dead money that accelerates into the cap by right. dividing it up. So that's what I see happening in this instance, you know. But I hey, look, I hold out hope because, you know, Vernon's yeah. a good dude. I don't want to see him, you know, I'd like to see him back. I'd like to see what he can do healthy, but the production's got to match.
Patty, if you were a betting person, yes or no, does Vernon stay?
I would say no. Yeah. I don't think so. I don't have a good feeling about it. I understand it. I look at the business aspect of it. You know, you and I both know that Vernon is not a slouch. The kid works his tail off. Mm-hmm. You know, he's not a problem in the locker room. He does what's asked of him. He's a quiet dude. But the production doesn't match the money. And that's where you have to make the hard decisions.
That's what this league's about, right? Mm-hmm. The production has to match your contract. And like I said earlier, I don't blame Vernon. If somebody came to me and said, I'll give you $85 million, whatever it was, I'd be like, yeah, okay, sounds good. You know, I don't blame Vernon one iota. It's not like he was a 16-sack guy, Pat, and then he came to the Giants and all of a sudden he's got seven. Sorry. Okay, he was never that type of player. I blame Jerry Reese.
Well, they had no choice because when you whiff on draft picks.
Why? Why? Yeah. Because he kept swinging and missing at every draft.
Yeah, yeah. That was the problem there, Chris. I mean, I said it then, and it's a vicious cycle that Gettleman is trying to break because, you know, you miss on a draft pick, now you got to overspend to make up for that, and that became a vicious cycle and a big reason why the talent wasn't where it needed to be. So Gettleman, it's going to take him a couple of years to fix that, you know, because you still got that burning contract on the book. You got Janoris Jenkins on the book, you know, Eli Manning's contracts, you know, they got to make a decision there. So yeah, you got to ultimately restore some sort of balance where you have the talent and you don't have to go out and spend big bucks to fill in glaring holes on your roster. Rather, you're using free agency to supplement what you have or to get by until the draft class has something, you know, that you can, you know, talent that you can dip into.
Yeah, listen, Gettleman was handed a big mess. Is that fair to say?
I think so.
Right. Strapped cap-wise with ridiculous contracts that Reese gave out because he couldn't draft well. So, you know what? You got to give Gettleman, you know, people, I understand this is New York. Everybody wants to win yesterday. I understand that. But you got to give Gettleman a few years, Pat. I mean, he had a pretty good first draft. We agree on that?
Oh, absolutely.
We got a left tackle for a few years. I understand he's not Jason P. You know, he's not a Hall of Fame left tackle, but he's way better than what we had.
Okay.
He brought in a left guard that's going to be here from 8 to 10 years. All right. Did he miss on a few free agent signings? Yes. So does everybody. He's not the only general manager miss on free agent signings. Okay.
Yep.
So he got some defense going, Pat. He got some nice little draft. He brought in a nice guard. He brought over Solder. Got to give Gettleman another draft and then another draft and get out of this cat mess that we're in because of Jerry Reese's horrific dress.
Yes, amen to that. All right. On that note, Chris, let's wrap this one up. Folks, as always, thank you for listening. Be sure to tune in the rest of the week. We're going to talk about linebackers. We're going to talk about safeties, corners, and just, you know, continue our breakdown of the 2018 Giants by position. So on behalf of Chris Miziano, this is Patricia Traina signing off. Thank you for listening.